You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen. And today, we're going right back to the beginning of time because we are going to go through the history of gardening. And Karen has prepared an entire 2 lectures on the history of gardening.
So, yeah. Buckle up, guys. Yeah. Listen to this as I shuffle my paper.
Why are we learning the history of gardening, Karen?
Just because. I love history.
I love hearing
I
all
suck
about
at it, but, yeah, if you ask me to recall any of this, these facts in, like, a year. But I've got my notes, so I'll just refer to notes.
Okay.
But we're going way back.
From the
way back in time.
The dawn of time?
I guess. We'll start with at, well, let's start at the first word, shall we?
Okay.
On the page. It's called forest. Forest gardening. A plant-based food production system, Selena.
Oh, okay.
Have you heard of those?
I've heard of food forests.
This, I think, is... Well, tell me what you think of this. It's originated in prehistoric times along jungle-clad riverbanks and in the wet foothills of monsoon regions. How we know this? I'm not entirely sure, but that's what Wikipedia said.
If it's prehistory, it's before even history.
So we're even going sub-history. We're going beyond.
Does that count?
I don't know. I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Okay. Right.
And this was to improve the environment that people would identify useful tree and vine species and protect and improve them whilst undesirable species were eliminated.
Okay.
So you just have your tree tribes.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a useful vine. We'll take care of that. Rather than, like, you know, establishing a full-on...
Yeah, so it's already there. You're just taking out the ones that you don't really want.
I love it. Is that... What a forest garden... We've got to look into the idea of a forest garden. I think they're slightly different.
Okay.
The forest garden that we know.
Right.
Not the prehistoric versions.
Okay.
Probably follows a similar theme, though, whereby you're using, you know, a variety of species that inhabit that particular zone comfortably, and you're just kind of working with them rather than trying to organise everything and manipulate it all to suit you.
But Karen, I have a question. Mm-hmm. Who planted the first garden?
I don't have a name. Are you wanting a name here? Do you know?
Do you
have a name?
I thought God planted the first garden.
Oh, we're going to go back to... Well, I mean, created, yeah.
Yeah.
Created. I don't know.
He created the birds and the bees.
The hands of God.
And
the work
the
of God.
Trees and the butterflies.
I'm coming to that.
Okay.
Hold up. Although, that's right. It's sort of like the egg before the chicken there or whatever. But anyway, so that's prehistoric.
Mm-hmm.
Then, 10,000 BC.
Yes.
Okay. Enclosing outdoor growing spaces began to become a thing. And this began in West Asia and then spread into Europe. So they went from the forest gardening concept where, you know, it was there and they made use of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then around, the next step was enclosing gardens. And this was to, of course, exclude animals and marauders. I learnt a word, marauder.
Like wild elephants?
Yeah. Well, most things. Most animals want what's in your garden, I find.
Stomping on your precious seedlings.
Yeah. Apart from the carnivores, but they'll usually find other uses for the garden.
Okay.
Anyway, so that was that. And then we're going to move up to 3000 BC. And this is where we have written texts, pictorial sculpture and archaeology, which reveals that gardening was undertaken by the ancient people of Mesopotamia. And this is where I guess we start hearing about it in the Bible, which I've been told is the oldest scripture. Is that right?
The oldest writing. Well, not the oldest.
One of them.
Yeah.
And around this time, this was when they reckon that the Hanging Gardens of Babylon were established.
Yeah.
Because this is when, because Mesopotamia consisted of Sumerians, Akkadians, Assyrians, and Babylonians.
Okay.
And the Gardens of Babylon, if in case you're wondering, the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, are one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, which I thought was pretty beautiful. Although, interestingly, they haven't actually got any sound evidence on that. Like, there's been no... there's been, like, you know, sculptures and archaeology revealing that they garden, but not so much about the Hanging Gardens.
Well...
But it's more of a...
How would they know? Because if all the plants died, or were just...
I think it may be word of mouth.
That one? Okay. So going to Babylon, whereabouts is Babylon today?
Okay. So Mesopotamia literally translates as between two rivers, and these two rivers were the Tigris and Euphrates.
Okay.
They're still there?
Yeah. Okay. In the Middle East.
Well, are they still called that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And in Western tradition, the location of the Garden of Eden in the Book of Genesis mentions the Tigris and Euphrates as two of the four rivers bounding the Garden of Eden, which I suppose is the first garden.
That's where it was watered, the garden, it said. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I wonder if the scripture was meaning more... than, say, like a backyard garden. Well, that's how I envisaged it when people talked about the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve. I just pictured a garden and someone's, their yard. Orchards and blah. But it's like a land of fertile growth.
Yeah.
Which I believe this is, or was. So moving on, the Assyrian kings... I think they were quite a successful monarch, developed a style of city garden, incorporating a naturalistic layout, running water supplied from river headwaters, and exotic plants obtained from foreign campaigns. The city-style garden reached its zenith with the palace design of Sennacherib, and this was around 700 BC.
Okay.
So I think these people were around for quite a while. This clan of people, if you can call it that. And they were saying that this water system and this palace garden stretched for 50 kilometres into the hills. Now that's a real Garden of Eden, isn't it? That's like from here to Hamilton.
Hey.
Here being West Auckland. Is it, or is it not? Maybe. Yeah, oh no, is that it? How many? I know that, no, it's a bit more.
50 kilometres.
Not so much.
Not so much.
Just before you won't quite reach Hamilton.
No.
But still.
Halfway maybe.
Quite a distance.
Yeah.
A lot of maintenance. A lot of servants required. into the hills, and whose garden was higher, and so they say, more ornate than any other. So, that was supposed to be the sort of pinnacle there of palace gardens or city gardens. King Arsenicepal II writes, he wrote this of this garden, and this is a quote: "The canal water gushes from above into the gardens. Fragrance pervades the walkways. Streams of water as numerous as the stars of heaven flow into the pleasure garden. And like a squirrel, I pick the fruit in the garden of delights." So that's the king's...
Sounds lovely.
I'm trying to say his name again. Those were his exact words, apparently. How cool. So moving on. Now we're going to move now into Egyptian times.
Okay.
And gardens were much cherished in Egyptian times. And they were kept for both secular purposes and attached to temple compounds. The ancient Egyptian garden would have looked different from a modern garden that we're used to seeing today, in most parts of the world, I would say. It would have seemed more like a collection of herbs or a patch of wildflowers, lacking the specialty bred flowers we commonly find today. Formal bouquets seem to have been composed, and this is from evidence, archaeological evidence and writings and things like that, seem to be composed of plain flowers, like the mandrake, the poppy, the cornflower, the lotus, and papyrus.
Okay.
All pretty simple, yeah. Still very beautiful, but not something you'd find, say, if you ordered a bouquet online, you know, you wouldn't... I'd like some papyrus, yes. And, you know, they're not really flowers that you would go to first, are they?
Quite simple.
And obviously this was due to the arid climate of Egypt, and tending the gardens meant constant attention and depended on irrigation. So while the poor Egyptians would keep a simple patch for growing edibles, the rich with their skilled gardeners could afford gardens that were lined with trees, and they would include decorative pools with fish and waterfowl and all that.
Well, much like today.
Yeah, not much has changed. So I was thinking actually, Selena,
yeah.
Since we were talking about some of these sort of ancient flowers used in the day, is there one that maybe...
Yes, that is our plant of the week.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. He'd spent about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia and an onion patch.
An onion patch.
Okay. Plant of the week is the humble poppy.
Oh, fancy that. So tell us about this plant, Selena.
Okay. Well, the poppy is a beautiful, simple flower with the crinkly petals.
Yeah.
And it has become a symbol of the fallen soldier for Anzac Day, Remembrance Day. And these poppies originated in the Middle East, so around the Egyptian area. And they are just a joy to have in the garden because of their why symbolize fallen soldiers, because their flowers sort of nod like they're looking a bit sad. When they come up, they sort of flop over like their heads are
I thought
crying.
It was to do with the color red and the shedding of blood on the war fields.
That is another legend associated with poppies.
Yeah. And the area that they fought as well.
The battlefields, yes. So poppies, they can be annual or perennial.
Oh.
So the annuals, they self-seed readily, so they come up year after year. So once you got them in your garden, you'll have them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Have you got them in your garden?
Well, no.
Neither. I tried growing them and...
No success. I'm not sure why.
Well, I had a little success. If anyone can give us any tips on how to grow poppies superbly, that'd be awesome. And I've heard that you can get other colours other than red too.
Yes. So they come in all kinds of citrusy colours. So you've not only got red, but you've got orange, yellow, there's white poppies... And lemony ones, so those kinds of ones.
White poppies?
Yes, and pale,
I wonder if that was a genetic.
Ones. That, well, white poppy was a bit of an, what do you call it, anomaly?
Oh, it's
it was bred by a man called Shirley, and it's become known as the Shirley poppy.
Oh, right.
And it's become a specialist kind of poppy, because all the other ones are colourful, and then you've got your white ones.
It's, what do you call people that don't have pigments?
Albino.
Is it? Yeah? Would it be? Yeah. Can you
kind of
like albinos in the plant world?
Recessive genes, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds special.
And the white poppy symbolised maybe peace.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the red one was like the bloodshed and the fallen soldiers.
Oh, nice.
So the good thing about poppies, if you're a florist, they make great cut flowers, and you can dry them. So you can use them in dried flower arrangements. And, if cut, they will last for a few days.
Yeah.
But cut them while they're in bud.
Okay.
And then they'll start to flower in the glass.
Yeah, because they have such like a fine petal.
Yeah,
they don't tend to last too long.
Now, growing your poppies, because, I haven't had much success, but maybe it's just the type of garden I have.
Mm-hmm.
They say it's best to plant them in full sun,
mm-hmm.
In a dryish area, not too damp and not boggy, mm-hmm. as you say, and sort of sandy soil. So okay. I think that's why mine didn't do that well.
Yeah, maybe best grown in pots. Then?
You could do.
But you can monitor it and manage it a bit more.
They love to multiply, and you can get whole fields of poppies.
Yeah.
So they need a bit of room. And they also like wind going through it because when they go to seed, they want to spread out all the seeds everywhere.
Yeah.
And the seed heads are really interesting because they look like little pepper pots.
Okay.
And you can shake them and the poppy seeds fall out.
Oh, wow.
But the thing about poppies, of course, we know that that is where opium mm-hmm. comes from. So there's hundreds of different varieties of poppies, but there's also these opium poppies, beautiful flower, that they...
Is that what they use for all these opiate medications that people are taking?
It's very poisonous.
So they still use the actual poppy. Yep. I know that there are some opiates out there that are synthetically manufactured.
Mm.
So the majority are still
from the actual opium poppy.
That's interesting.
They use that sap, which is a bit poisonous, and of course it makes you sedated, and then you can have hallucinations and all that.
Well, that's where they get heroin from.
Yeah, it turns into heroin and morphine. So that is the opium poppy.
That's interesting. It must be a huge business because apparently I've read that a huge amount of Americans are having major problems on these opioids. Not heroin, just like pills you get from your doctor for a backache and things like that. There's an actual, I think they're calling it an epidemic now. And you go to any hospital and, you know, there's morphine growing readily there. So there must be a lot of poppy fields out there.
Well,
maybe I could add that to my business. You know, I was talking about the eucalyptus.
Are you
going to
start growing some
drugs? I don't think the ground's sandy enough, though.
Oh, no.
It's just not going to happen.
Well, you're going to be competing with Afghanistan, which is where most of the opium comes from.
Might have a problem then. I don't know. Can't assume that it's dangerous just because I'm, you know, up against them in business. But I just know they're not a force to be reckoned with if they don't get along, that's all.
So,
I have to arm myself.
Apparently 93% of the world's opium comes from Afghanistan.
93%?
Yes. So there's something about the climate in Afghanistan that makes it very good for poppies.
Afghanistan. I wonder if that's where... Mesopotamia
sort of
was
a bit
once upon
on
a time.
The
I know Iraq is where Mesopotamia was.
Yeah.
So, and that's next to or near Afghanistan. Yeah.
Okay. The sad thing about the poppy fields in Afghanistan is they use so much of that land to grow these poppy flowers and then they're not using the land to grow food for their own people.
Oh, there's no money in food.
Oh.
You don't need food when you're high. right.
Yes. So, for poppies, when to sow them? Well, the best time to sow the traditional poppies is actually on Anzac Day.
Oh.
And then they'll flower by November, which is Remembrance Day on the 11th.
Okay, so Anzac Day is
April.
And then then it takes them that...
Yeah, well, they need to start growing and then...
Well, I suppose it just seems like... Okay, am I being impatient? Yeah,
a little.
I am. Okay. This seems like such a tiny little seed.
Yes.
And I always think, it's a tiny little seed, not much needs to happen. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Because, our poppy, you know, those ones that we buy for Anzac Day, there aren't any poppies around at that time.
But
it's a bit strange,
that's
isn't
true,
it?
That's true. But you've got a thing.
Yeah.
We've flipped.
Yes.
Where this took place, the poppy fields.
Yes. Wrong season.
Yeah. It's always the way, isn't it?
Now, if we had our Anzac that day in November. Just swap it around. So Anzac Day is the day you sow poppies, not poppies.
So I'm going to try that again. I'm going to try the sowing of, I'm going to do the poppy thing again.
Okay.
And when they do, and I'm going to assume that they are going to flower and do really well. With that awesome advice, thanks, Selena.
Okay.
But I'm going to, when they do flower in November, I'm going to just have a little homage to all those soldiers that lost their lives, and especially if I'm growing red ones. I'm going to just, even if it is in November, lest we forget at any time.
Yes.
Yeah.
A few more facts about poppies. Good for your rock garden. I think that's a suitable place. And in full sun, as I said. The poppy was actually dedicated to the god of death in Roman and Greek times.
Is that right?
The god of death was Thanatos, but also associated with the god of sleep, which is Hypnos, and the god of dreams, which was Morpheus. And that's where we get the name morphine from.
Yes. I have you ever had morphine? Have you been in hospital or had a recreation?
I've had family members who had to take morphine.
Same here, and I've heard that rather than dreams, it was more of a nightmare for them.
Oh.
I'm thinking of my partner when he was in hospital for months and on a drip feed. He was in a room isolated due to microbial, had major surgery and they wanted to keep him isolated and everything. And so he started going crazy.
Oh, no.
Well, crazier. But he swore he saw shadows looming across the room, and he just found it not relaxing at all. It was just, but I guess pain-wise it helped. But other than that, it was a real struggle.
And speaking of pain-killing and history, one of the sad things about the poppies and the opium was it kind of destroyed the relationship between Britain and China.
Okay.
Because of those opium wars where the British actually got the Chinese addicted to opium.
Yes, that sounds familiar.
So the Chinese were trading things like silk and tea, and the British just gave them opium.
First
class
drugs.
Yeah. So well done, Britain.
Oh, well, that's a clever tactic.
Just get everyone addicted to drugs.
But,
I think.
And was that sort of in the time of the British Empire when they were
way back then?
Wow, that's strategic.
I don't think they do that anymore. But just be aware of that.
Thank you for sharing that, since we're on the topic of history. Most interesting.
Humble poppy.
Yeah. And it's such a lovely, I work with kids and I know a few girls called Poppy. Must be, and I haven't heard it for a while, but it's coming. My cat's called Poppy.
Beautiful name.
It is a beautiful name.
And also there's tall poppy syndrome. That one.
Yeah.
Tends to, I don't know why, but they... They say that happens a lot in New Zealand.
Why do they refer to it as the poppy, though? There's lots of other tall.
We cut down our tall poppies.
Is it a tall? Does it grow tall? Like how? Because I've never had any success.
It's not as tall as a sunflower, that's for sure.
Yeah, why wouldn't you call it tall sunflower syndrome?
Why wouldn't you call it tall? Who knows? Write in and let us know.
Yeah.
GardenPlanetFM@gmail.com.
For sure.
Okay, so yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for that. So, anyway, we'll move on. I've got a page and a half to go, so bear with me. The next gardens mentioned were Indian gardens, and they're mentioned in some ancient Hindu texts. The Kama Sutra mentions details on house gardens and recommends that a good wife, listen to this, Selena, plant vegetables. You're thinking, oh, my goodness, what is... Karen about to say, bunches of sugar cane, clumps of fig trees and various flowers, and that a water feature be in the middle of the garden. So that was recommended in ancient texts by the Kama Sutra.
Sugar cane. I really wanted to grow that one.
Yeah.
But I wasn't allowed.
But you are What about your own personal garden?
I don't know where to put it.
Yeah.
I need a huge big pot.
The Hindus are not happy with you.
Oh,
so
I wouldn't make a good wife.
Me neither, because I don't have sugar cane in my garden either. Have I got any of those things? No, I do not have figs.
I have a water.
I've got plenty of water features. I've got buckets everywhere with water at the moment in them from all the rain we've been getting.
So
I've got some lovely flowers at the moment going, so I'm halfway there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm half a wife. Now we're going to enter into the Roman Empire age. And again, this is when, you know, a lot of scriptures and texts start coming through. And the texts show that during this age, the administrators of the Roman Empire actively exchanged information on agriculture, horticulture, animal husbandry, hydraulics, and botany. And the act of sharing seeds and plants was common practice. So that was way back then. And ornamental or decorative horticulture, which is basically a fancy way of saying, floristry, became prevalent during this time.
Wow.
Although I would have thought that the Egyptians would have been big on that, but they might not have had the plant selection that the Romans had.
I think as people, the populations grew and they started trading more and more variety of plants were available, perhaps.
Yeah. Now, where was I up to?
The Romans.
I was up to the Romans. This is a big one, though. Wealthy Romans built extensive villa gardens, often including fountains, rivulets, topiary, roses. You know what topiary is?
Topiary.
Topiary. If I said it wrong. I googled how to say it. And topiary? Okay. It's when they shape sculpt trees into shapes, bushes into shapes and stuff like that. Roses and shaded arcades. Archaeological evidence can still be found at some sites, Hadrian's Villa being one such site. So you can still go and see.
Amazing.
Yeah. Such gardens were said to be, no surprise, a refuge from urban life, a place of peace and solitude. Which they probably did need in those crazy times.
Well, they were feeding Christians to lions back then.
they were a force to be reckoned. I'm watching on Netflix Spartacus at the moment.
Yes.
And, I'm just mind-blowing. It's frightening how we're still here. Anyway, I guess we are heading to the... I'll just finish up with... Oh, I'm only halfway through the Roman part. Can we come back to this...
Listeners, so next week we are going to continue with our history and we are going to go right up to present day with this. So we're right at the Roman stage and then, coming up next. So shall we?
So sharpen your pencils, buckle on in, part two's coming. See you next week.
All right. Happy gardening, everyone. Don't forget to look out for those poppies. Beautiful.
Awesome. Keep up the good work.
Bye for now. Sunshine. There's gotta be